All right, riddle me this, Kev. What's one of the first upgrades you should do to your vehicle? What is it? What do you go for?
Well, you might think power, but ultimately, from a smart and safe perspective, definitely the brakes.
Yeah, no doubt. Upgraded braking system can really transform a vehicle's performance and honestly give you better peace of mind behind the wheel in any situation. You know, from the track, the off-road trails, even the morning commute, every single vehicle deserves performance brakes at an affordable price.
And no matter what your vehicle or driving style, PowerStop has complete brake upgrade kits for you. So head to PowerStop.com, fill in your vehicle's information into their easy-to-use brake finder to be matched with complete kits and components that are low-dust, noise-free, and feature upgraded stopping power.
That's right. You could join the thousands of other drivers that have already transformed their vehicle into a stopping powerhouse today with PowerStop. PowerStop.com, brake upgrades made easy.
This episode is brought to you by Shopify. Whether you're selling a little or a lot, Shopify helps you do your thing, however you cha-ching. From the launch your online shop stage, all the way to the we just hit a million orders stage. No matter what stage you're in, Shopify's there to help you grow. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/special offer, all lowercase. That's shopify.com/special offer.
It is the Two Guys Garage Podcast. He is Kevin Bird. I am Willie B, and fired up, man. We bring back one of our favorite guests. This dude is straight wild. We got some great memories from SEMA to shows to all kinds of stuff with this guy. And I got to tell you, not a better buddy to show up to your house on a weekend and say, hey, you want to do some welding, than our buddy Bob. And man, we're bringing the house down today with all kinds of cool tricks, you know, and some things that you may not be thinking about, but maybe you will. But guaranteed you're going to learn something today when it comes to TIG welding, right?
That's right, man. We got the Wizard of Welding. Welder Bob, man, and this guy has decades. One of the biggest welding companies in the world. Company that, you know, pretty much designed, developed most of what we use today, ESOP. So this guy was not only, a welder through and through. The guy can lay down beads, whatever type of welding. He's a trainer. He's a teacher. He goes to plants and he helps set up equipment. He's really involved with even the, let's say, the new product development, making sure it's got all the features, making sure it operates right. This guy knows the weld and the science, and it's amazing, man. He blows my brain because you and I, we lay down welds. We do it all the time, but he can walk up and say, oh, you didn't have enough shield gas, or oh, you didn't have enough, you know, voltage here, or this or that, or all the science ways to make it better.
He's a straight nut house. He's Rain Man when it comes to welding. Like this guy, honest to God, man, you know a guy's really into welding when everything that you see in his world translates to welding. I don't care if you're getting chicken fried chicken and corn on the cob, man. Somehow that's going to relate back to welding, and he'll bring it full circle and make you learn something with it too. You'll sit there with a mouthful of food and knowledge at the same time. It's crazy. This guy can pack it in. So, Bob, welcome back to the podcast. It's always awesome to have you on. First, we got to ask, man, how's retirement?
It's wide open, baby. I thought I was going to have all this time, and it's just project after project. So,
amen, man. We're always building cool stuff. So, you know, a little background on you. How long have you been – have you laid down more miles from welding than you have a car?
Yeah, probably. I've welded since 1971, and I've visited all the major manufacturers in the U.S., major companies. I was the tech guy. I'm the lab rat. I'm the guy that used to go out in the field and help people with their problems. So you'd always go in. They'd be mad as heck at you for things. By the time you left, they were feeling a lot better. So, and a great career.
Yeah, man. And you contribute so much to your problem-solving skills just to the fact that you've – you know, you welded on everything. You really do live that lifestyle from the things that you build in your own passion. But you really found such a cool network of friends and knowledge. And with the companies that you've been a part of, it's allowed you to grow and learn and experiment. And really, there's nothing that you haven't done, tried, experimented with when it comes to metal. It's like, you're a whole different version of Iron Man, but you're so close to that when it comes to welding.
I welded a lot of stuff. Some of it, I didn't even know what it was. Government secret stuff. If they told you, they'd have to kill you. So, yeah.
Yeah, man.
It's been fun.
Oh, this is going to be fun, as always. You know, because it doesn't matter how good I think I'm feeling about how I'm welding, or, you know, I think I've got it all understood. I mean, literally, I can have a two-minute conversation with you, and boop, whoa, that's something I never thought about. That's something I never realized. That's just a setting that's always been there, but I didn't quite understand what it did. So I think you guys strap on your seatbelts. This is going to be an awesome ride. I think today we're going to dive heavy into TIG. Now, to get us started, you know, I think a lot of folks kind of get right into the steel, so we'll get a little baseline, but we're going to just keep ratcheting it up. So, you know, stay tuned, stay in touch, keep your ears full on, maybe get your notepad, because we're going to lay down some knowledge today with the welder Bob.
Amen to that. We'll see you right after the break. It's the Two Guys Garage Podcast with Kevin Byrd and Willie B.
This episode is brought to you by La Quinta by Wyndham. Your work can take you all over the place, like Texas. You've never been, but it's going to be great because you're staying at La Quinta by Wyndham. Their free bright side breakfast will give you energy for the day ahead. And after, you can unwind using their free high-speed Wi-Fi. Tonight, La Quinta. Tomorrow, you shine. Book your stay today at LQ.com.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
It is the Two Guys Garage Podcast. He is Kevin Byrd. I am Willie B. We're fired up today. We have a great friend. And man, I really think because he was so influential to me when it comes to welding, and especially, you know, helping out Kev in any issue or wild thing that he wanted to learn, this guy is a friend, but man, he's a teacher, a professor, a guy that you love to absorb some of his wisdom and knowledge from, because he's just that well of a resource. Bob, welcome back to the podcast, man. It's been too long since we had you on. We're glad to grab a little bit of time with you, man.
Thanks for having me here. It's good to talk with you guys.
So we want to cut our teeth quick, man. Steel. Let's talk steel. Just get a baseline on it. When it comes to TIG welding, which, you know, we've spoken in the past about some MIG stuff, but we really want to get in on TIG welding today. Just, you know, before we get started, walk us through what you believe top three mistakes people make or people think about TIG welding. It could be perception-wise, it could be intimidation factor, it could be equipment, but what do you think is the holdup to keep people from converting over to TIG welding so oftentimes out there?
Yeah, if we're talking about DC TIG, relatively straightforward, but they don't realize there's certain chill gas. You got to use argon. Okay, I've had guys trying to use 10% CO2 because somebody told them something. So you got to remember that all of this welding is basically science. All right, it breaks down to simple things. So shield gas is a little bit of a, especially for beginners, okay, in the field. Then maybe choosing tungstens. And then just a little bit of technique. I mean, this is not inherent stuff that you just are born with. This is stuff you have to practice, right? Don't jump in and think you're going to weld up aluminum boats or something because you bought a brand new AC/DC TIG. It takes time. You got to start at the bottom and work up slowly. Steel being relatively easy. If you've ever oxy fuel welded or brazed, TIG welding is kind of similar. You got a heat source in your hand. You got a control down at your foot for the heat. And you got a shield gas. What you're going to get, you're going to melt metal, all right? And once you understand what a weld pool looks like, now I can start to teach you and drag you along down this long, winding road.
Well, let's talk about that weld pool. You mentioned that, and so often people refer to that. That's really the epicenter of all the action and focus. What are people looking for when it comes to that weld pool? How do they move it? What's the best way to you know, sort of approach a simple TIG weld for people that are looking to, you know, sort of convert over from doing MIG all their life?
So here's the problem. So when you're MIG welding, you're going to pull the gun trigger and you're going to squirt metal. And TIG is wildly different. TIG, I have a heat source. Hopefully, I never tuck the tungsten down to the weld pool. Hopefully, you know what happens.
Right.
You got a heat source, and you got to wait for the metal to melt. And when she melts, she's going to tell you. It's going to be bright, shiny little pool. Now, as you guys and I talked before, you got to be able to see, right? You got to have good vision. If you want to wear a cheater.
Reader glasses, yes. I suggest readers.
You're going to watch this molten pool, and she's going to talk with you. This but, is the kind
you know,
of
you
stuff
say,
I
you say it talks
well.
To you, but you're right. There's a shiny part of that puddle,
yeah.
And then just on the outside layer, you can see it getting some black stuff building up in it, and as you get, you know, back to the point where it's starting to, you know, sort of lock up, it's wild what that puddle is doing, but it's a living thing there, and you got to feed it. You got to constantly keep it hot and keep that metal moving. What are some ways that people can do that?
Well, I mean, you have control most times for a decent TIG machine. You have a foot control, and that's your heat. That's your speed. You got to press it down. You get a puddle started. And when she turns bright silver, you can try to move her down the plate. But if you don't have enough heat, she's not going with you. That puddle is just going to disappear, right?
Yeah, when I, you know, try to teach friends TIG, you know, one of the things I'll try to say is, hey, you got your foot, you got your left hand, you got your right hand, you got a lot of things going on, and it gets complicated. So maybe first out of the bat, just forget about the filler and just learn the puddle, right? Just learn the heat with your foot, grow that puddle, you know, that pool as size that you want, and then, like you said, start moving it. And it's just the puddle. It's going to, you know, freeze up behind you, but you want to make sure that you're learning how much heat it takes to keep that puddle, that pool, the size you want and the speed moving down. And then you can kind of maybe look at the backside of whatever panel you got, and you can kind of get an idea if you have the penetration that you're looking for. And just do that a number of times and get the hand motion before thinking about adding filler. Now, I mean, do you find that helpful for folks, or do you do something different?
Absolutely. You have to keep the pool underneath that tungsten. If you move too fast, you're not going to have a pool underneath your tungsten, and that's where your heat is. That's where your penetration takes place. So I equate it to oxy fuel. The first time you ever made an oxy fuel weld, you had to sit and wait and wait and wait. Well, with electric MIG, or electric TIG, it's instant. I mean, you push that pedal down, you'll melt material. And now just carry her down the plate. Again, don't worry about the filler metal, like you said. That comes later. After you carry puddles, now you start to worry about how you're going to sneak that little wire into that well pool.
Now, another thing I want to bring up, because we keep referencing heat and making sure you're melting that puddle and all that, but one thing that occurs that a lot of people, I've had a victim, man, the first time when I first started doing my wide body, you know, I did it so I could learn how to TIG weld, I had to replace the gas cap on the side of the quarter panel. Well, I just did a little patch panel and I TIG welded it in. I was doing exactly what you said, but what I forgot is if you put too much heat in one side or area, the rest of this whole quarter panel got affected. And I mean, the whole thing moved, and it literally, honest to God, it took me several days to fix how bad I damaged that, because I hadn't learned up until that point, because you know, every accident and error is a great teacher. And believe me, I learned a valuable lesson then on making sure you don't put too much heat in the panel, because everything around it has to remain, you know, as it was before you started throwing so much heat at it.
And that's an excellent point for TIG welding, because I can control that heat input with my foot pedal, with my amperage. So typically 1 ampere for every 1,000th of plate thickness. That's the way you'd set up the machine. MIG, guys kind of crank up a wire in a voltage and start squirting steel. That's kind of hard to control. TIG is very, very precise. So any heat you apply to a panel is going to cause a heating and a shrinking, right? Stretching and shrinking. So TIG, I control that with my foot, so I can watch it. I watch how everything's happening. I can see the temper colors. I can help control that much better, and I can go very low currents. I can go down to 5 amps.
Explain what you mean by the temper colors. A lot of people, how far do you want that ring to occur, those layers? Everybody that's TIG welded, you'll see the metal react to it, and you'll see how far the heat absorbs into the metal, and it's changing the color of it. Explain that a little bit.
You don't want it to see it go out too far. you want to see that bright, shiny pool. Then you want to see a little bit of heat color on the edges, and you want to start moving. When you see that temper color start to grow, it means you're in big trouble. Something.
Yeah, I would advise anyone thinking about TIG, just get some thicker plate. Stay away from the sheet metal until you can move quick, right? Because it's real easy to start saturating, especially in thin metal. So, Willie, I mean, I think you jumping on sheet metal was bold.
Oh, yeah, man, right out the gate.
But, you know, and especially I think with aluminum, because that runs real fast out in front of you because it's got such a high conductivity. So I think, man, get your rhythm to where you can move. So as soon as you start to make that pool, you're just running. So you're just digging that one little trench where you're, you know, putting your weld, getting those two pieces joined together, but you're trying not to heat everything else and get as much, let's say, reduction in warpage as possible. At least that's kind of my approach.
Reason that car took 9 years to build, bro.
Everybody wants to start with hard stuff, though. Everybody wants to jump straight to 24 gauge panels. And you're right, Kevin. You got to go with the heavier stuff. You get a hand for it. This is why practice is important.
Yeah, and I think when we get into aluminum, I think that's really where a lot of people run into trouble is, you know, they saturate the heat. They're not moving quick enough, right? They're just not quite capable of staying ahead of it. So, you know, I think get a lot of steel down under your belt before jumping to the aluminum side. Now, you know, you mentioned a couple things real quick on the steel, Bob. So getting ourselves a baseline, what do you recommend for tungsten? Tungsten size, gas flow. You mentioned argon. Why is there a difference between a MIG gas and a TIG gas?
So I'm stuck with TIG with this thing called the tungsten electrode, and it is reactive. Okay, it can't tolerate oxygen or carbon dioxide. It'll oxidize the tungsten itself and erode it. So now it's going to mess up your arc stability. So with TIG, you're pretty much stuck with straight argon or argon helium blends. They're both inert gases. MIG, I like a reactive gas. It adds heat to the arc. But for TIG, it's a no-no.
Mm.
There's chemistry, the little bit of science behind it.
There's that chemistry, guys, right there, man.
Yep. So tungsten, just like everything else, there's all of these different tungstens.
Yeah, we got reds, we got greens, we got lanthanated. I mean, people can get kind of confused.
They serve a purpose. Have specific functions. Back in the day, there was red and green. And then they snuck in a yellow. Because the red is 2% thoriated, they stuck in a yellow, it was 1% thoriated. And all of these mixtures added to the flexibility of the process. They were gearing it up to weld better, using better tungstens suited for certain materials. Right? So green was always aluminum. That was the pure, lower melting temperature. Red, thoriated, higher melting temperature, good for the steels and stainless steels. Well, thoriated tungsten ran into some problems, I don't know, 15, 20 years back. It's radioactive. So they came out with ceria and lanthana. These are rare earths. Okay.
I mean, that doesn't always mean a bad thing. A third arm when it comes to TIG welding would be a big helpful tool.
Yeah. So a ceriated tungsten, the lanthanated rare earths, I can now use them for both DC and AC. They respond well in both, so we really don't have to have two different tungstens. A big debate out there whether ceria is better than lanthana. I am not going to argue that point. It's like pointless, right? But they do have purposes. I can now sharpen them and run them in AC, which was unheard of back in the, you know, 50s, 60s, and 70s. So tungsten's important. Read the manufacturer's recommendations, but I'm kind of a ceria or a lanthanum guy now.
Okay, so give us a color that you would most often go with if you're doing steel or stainless steel.
So red.
Make it easy. Give us a color.
Yeah, but that's not so easy anymore because they messed up the color codes. You have gray, black, and gold, and orange. Pokey smoked. Okay. And there are different degrees. Then somebody came out with a purple one. And that's a mixture of ceria, lanthanum.
This is straight Roy G. Biv. Before we run out of time, we got to talk chrome moly because so many people are building, you know, row cages. So many people are building, you know, hot rods and rat rods, and so many people are diving into chrome moly. What's the difference between, say, chrome moly and a regular steel that somebody might be, you know, welding?
Oh, man, it's a jump. It's a major, major jump. Mild steel, man, you can put in a hot pass, put in a smoker, you know, and everything's good to go. The metal doesn't, you know, mine much or anything. You make that same kind of weld with chrome moly, you're going to have cracking issues. So when I choose a filler metal, right, major thing that I have to do, I got to know what my base materials are. I choose a filler metal to go in there. With steels, you want an overmatch. You want that weld a little tougher than the base mild steel, okay? Chrome moly, that's not necessarily the case. I want to under-spec that filler material a tad, or else my welds get hard. And this is all based on the material thickness, and if you're going to post-heat treat it, now you're down in the metallurgy now, but it becomes more complicated. Tons of good information out on the web about it, but make sure you go to credible sources to find this information, right?
So what would you do if you're welding chrome moly?
I'm going to keep my bead size a certain way. My heat input's down low. I don't want to overheat the material, but I don't want it to cool fast. Cooling fast promotes cracking in chrome moly. So you would normally think I'm going to run a chrome moly filler rod. On thick sections, that's absolutely the case. On thick sections, I'm probably going to heat treat it afterwards, but not on roll cages. I don't know anybody who heat treats roll cages.
No.
It's a general rule.
No.
I don't. Right? So you're in the as welded condition. So most chrome moly is what they call normalized condition. So when I weld it, if it's a little less strength than the base material, that weld is going to be able to give. If it doesn't give, what does it do? It breaks. Uh-huh. So this is why you got to be very, very careful that you know what you're welding, what the material is, and then what filler metal you're going to use. A 70S2, which is an old MIG wire, works actually very well for chrome moly tubing on roll cages.
I was actually going to guess that. No, I wasn't.
Yes,
I had no idea.
You know.
Hey, but all right, so we're going to finish up on chrome moly and get into what everybody's thinking about aluminum. Everybody has a date with aluminum. You probably just haven't set yours yet. All right, coming up, we'll talk to you on how to wine and dine that sucker. Back after the break, it's the Two Guys Garage Podcast, Kevin Bird and Willie B. It is the Two Guys Garage Podcast. He is Kevin Bird. I am Willie B. We have our buddy Bob, who's just a Mac when it comes to welder. Straight truck, y'all. This guy knows everything. When we left, we were talking about how to weld chrome moly and what kind of metal you want to use. And we were talking about a few of them, but it's really, when it gets down to it, Bob, isn't it just basically the lower end, you know, steel that you're putting into it? Because it's going to absorb some of that chrome moly during the process?
That's correct. It's going to dilute some into that. So a lot of times when these guys are welding these roll cages also, they'll put in tiny, tiny little concave beads, right? Because they want them to look real pretty. And a nice concave bead is really good, right? No.
No.
It's actually horrible. That concave bead has a lot of stress on the surface. When it shrank, it pulled tension on the surface of that bead. So you don't want concave small beads. You got to get enough heat in there that you don't shock the material. You actually want to get chrome moly hot, and you want it to cool kind of slow. And the dilution of steel filler helps it be a little bit weaker so it can stand the stresses in the joint. There's a lot of science here. Yeah.
So are you looking for a straight 45 kind of weld between the tubes,
yes,
or would you see a little bulbousness?
A little convex is okay.
So anything from flat to convex, yeah.
Yeah, these race car guys don't like convex beads. They want them, you know, concave.
Weight savings. Weight savings. They want it to look good.
Yeah. Well, yeah, man, just remember hot and slow, which describes a lot of the girls I dated in high school. So let's move on to aluminum, man, because aluminum is the holy grail. If you're in a car clique or you got a group of car buddies, there's always one guy, or you're always looking for a guy that can, you know, build you a fuel cell or weld aluminum, or, you know, help you out with that aluminum bracket brace you got to get fixed or repaired. There's always that guy you're looking for. Well, here's how you become that guy. Here's how you work with aluminum in ways that gives you some confidence. What, you know, aluminum is so crazy, man. It's such a wild metal to work with, because it starts going to liquid quick. And once it does, it has an attitude about joining anything else.
Absolutely correct. If you're a steel welder and I'm going to take you over to the aluminum side, I may have to remove your brain and turn it around inside your head. Because a steel guy is going to
so
whip this thing and play around and do all this. And with aluminum, you got to go in hot and you got to start to move. Aluminum is thermally conductive. It's going to suck the heat away real fast. So you got to pour the coals to it to get started. Once she starts, though, you better start to go, because she's not going to tell you she's hot. There's no temper color in aluminum. So you better be watching that weld bead we talked about, that puddle. That puddle tells you everything you need to know. When she gets the size you need, you better start to run. You're working on small parts, you'll get into a heat soak, and all that stuff will go down into your lap. It'll go into your gloves, down your sleeves. It'll go places you don't want it to go.
Sounds fantastic. Yes, I can't wait.
Yeah. Same kind of tip with steel TIG. Start thicker. You know, obviously you don't want to get so thick that, because it does absorb a lot of heat. So you got to put some heat to it. You got to lay down the wick. But start with something thick enough, you know, at least 0.65 or I'd say higher. That's going to give you a whole lot better ability to not, and something of a, say, a larger piece, you know, not some tiny two little, you know, corner
inch by inch,
you know, pieces of plate, man. It's going to saturate and it's going to drive you nuts. Give yourself at least something with some size to it, because that puddle and managing that puddle is tricky. And like I said, maybe even the same thing, grab yourself a decent size plate, you know, 10 by 10 or something, and practice getting the puddle, like start it, stop it, start it, stop it, and then just move that puddle. And you'll see how fast you got to move that puddle before you even start thinking about throwing the filler out in there.
Well, that, and also something we haven't touched on is prep work, because when aluminum starts to go, like they said, there's no temper color and you can't see when it's getting hot. You just have to know it. You have to follow the puddle. But something's occurring on that surface, because there's a layer of oxidation on most aluminum occurs really fast. And if you haven't prepped it right or didn't do your homework, even so, maybe didn't get it all the way through. Once that initial layer burns, it becomes much softer. But that initial layer, it requires a little more heat, doesn't it, Bob? It requires a little more fire and torch to get that thing out of the way.
Well, you're not going to melt that outer layer. That outer layer is aluminum oxide. It melts like 10,000 degrees, right? It's a refractory. So you have to mechanically or electrically remove it. First, you got to degrease your parts. Cleanliness is the key to almost all welding. We didn't speak about that with chrome moly, but chrome moly, you've got to have the oils off the materials. Aluminum's no different. You got to be super clean. And now I got to get this oxide layer off, and it can be tenacious. It's a thick layer, depending how long the aluminum's been laying around. I'm going to take a stainless steel wire brush and get most of it off. And I mean a brandy new, clean wire brush, not one that you brush down the transmission or engine parts.
Oh, that would be awful.
Degreaser. I'm talking about a virgin brush there, because you got to get the surface clean. In AC TIG, the reverse polarity cycle also helps strip off the rest of that oxide layer, but unless you've cleaned it prior, it may not really clean it as well as you'd like it. So there's a two-part cleaning going on. Mechanical up front, well, first with a chemical, then a mechanical, and then with the arc itself, we'll etch the plate. I got to get through that hard layer to get to that nice soft aluminum. If not, you will see a scum on top of the weld pool. That bright, shiny pool you're supposed to be looking at, she's going to be scummy looking. You see that a lot if you don't have enough shield gas, right? You get any atmosphere in by your weld zone, that pool is going to get scummy looking. She got to stay bright and shiny, a reflective mirror. Then you know you're right.
Well, that is the key. I mean, just to kind of hit that home again, if your aluminum isn't clean, it's just going to cause nothing but trouble. You're going to see black soot. And like you said, just a film in there. It's just going to be nasty. It's going to spit and sputter on your tungsten. You're going to throw things and you're going to hate it. So absolutely start with clean. And if you think about steel, right, when it's exposed to, you know, moisture, oxygen, it'll start to rust. But like you said, on aluminum, it's an oxide, and that's kind of the equivalent of rust and aluminum, or rust and steel, sort of. But it's, like I said, it's incredibly hard, and that's what protects aluminum and keeps it from, you know, corroding in a lot of situations where it's not extreme. That's why you can throw aluminum out in the yard for, you know, a year, and it just has kind of a gray look instead of being rusted through. That oxide layer is protecting, but you got to get it off and you got to get through it.
So just to put it in perspective, see, the aluminum oxide is on the surface of that material. It's very similar to the actual pink cup that's on the end of that pig torch. It's an alumina cup. And what is alumina? Aluminum oxide. So that's how tough that is. And people don't quite understand that until I take the cup and I hit them in the head with it.
Well, I'm glad you brought up cups, because I was going to ask you a question about that. But before we get into the cups and what size you do and where do you put the tungsten and all that stuff, what speed, everybody talks about how much faster you got to move with aluminum. Let's say the same perspective pieces, right, same gauge. How much faster are you going to move on aluminum than you would, say, on steel? Is it 20-25%? Is it 40% faster? Given the relative identical piece,
it could be double. Again, depending on what you're doing and how. Thin sections, you have to move pretty quick. You got to keep your heat low and you got to dab it along. So, you know, 20-30 inches a minute, you're dancing down this part. Quarter inch aluminum obviously is going to be slower, and it's probably not faster than MIG welding. MIG welding aluminum, I'm going to sail. I'm going to be flying down the part because I'm punching in a lot of wire behind me. So with TIG, you're adding it by hand. So that's a little tough to say apples to apples, but yeah.
You can run them both the same speed, I would say, but you could probably get away with going a lot slower in steel before it bites you.
Yeah, maybe, yeah.
You know, so it's not like you have to, you know, go twice as fast as steel. But if you're not moving quick enough, you know, you'll see it in aluminum, and you'll start to see your part, you'll see your puddle, instead of being just this perfect shiny little thing that's moving with you, it gets, I don't know, wrinkly, gray,
and wide.
You know, it just, and yeah, wide, and it just starts falling apart. And that's where you just got to back off, keep your shield gas on it, you know, and let it cool down so you're not getting oxides in there. And just back off and let it cool.
When you see it start to sink on you, you better pick up. And these are the things that, you know, the keys of watching that well pool. You got to watch that pool. It's your only center of attention. You really don't watch the tungsten. You don't watch where you're putting filler metal. That's muscle memory after practicing.
So you keep saying you got to watch the pool. Let's talk about how you do that. Do you find that people have a better chance of watching the pool if they have a clear, like the glass? On my TIG welder, I have the clear cup. And for me, it helps me in a lot of ways follow that puddle and keep a better eye on it. But, you know, a man of your stature and welding wisdom doesn't need something like that. But I find it does indeed help. What would you recommend, and how far are you setting out the tungsten? Give us kind of a rundown of how you set up the machine handle, and you know, if you were doing like mild steel or aluminum.
Yeah, the tungsten normally sticks out of the cup short amount, enough to give you visibility when you're down on top of that weld. All right, I don't want excessive amounts out there. I want to keep maybe a quarter inch of tungsten out front. I'll rock the cup down and I'll have my head looking from the side into where I'm welding. I'll weld toward myself. With TIG, you are always pushing the weld with the tungsten. Whichever direction the tungsten is pointing, that's the way you're going. I mean, I've seen guys try to drag TIG. That doesn't work.
You can't drag TIG, guys.
So as I'm looking up inside there, I want just enough tungsten out. Now, they invented this thing called a gas lens. Like back in the 60s, I think. I mean, I actually worked for the guy who did that, Gene Gorman. I'm a lens believer, right? The lens gives you a better stream. I can keep that tungsten out a little farther. That helps me on certain joints that I have to reach in deep. Because what I'm really after is keeping the arc length about the thickness of the tungsten itself. I want to be about 60 thousandths off the puddle with a 1/16 tungsten. And that's pretty close.
As so you keep will, that arc length, that arc from the end of the tungsten to the pool. Keep
top
that,
of the pool.
Yeah, top of the pool. You want to keep that about as wide as the tungsten. And
yes.
And, you know, there's times, especially in aluminum, where it wants to jump and it wants to flip around and flop around.
No.
What's going on there, and how do you tighten that up?
If that tungsten's flopping around, then you have over too much current. You've gone over the current limit for that specific size tungsten, and you need to do a couple things maybe. Jump to the 332, the next size up, and sharpen it back. The new TIG machines, you actually can sharpen it. You don't have to run with that floppy ball. If you have an old traditional machine, you're going to be stuck with that floppy ball at the end of that tungsten, which is not horrible. Once you learn that you have to size your tungsten with the amperage you're using, that it's a no-brainer. That's what we always did in the past. Today, we get to cheat. I can take a 1/16th well below the old current limit and still weld on aluminum with it, with a point, which I like better because it gives you better current density. I can keep things tighter, but
yeah.
It's a little bit smaller beads.
Yeah, I will say, you know, for a lot of people getting that, if you have two plates coming together, you know, there's technically maybe a little bit of a gap. And I don't know, Philly, that's the part you're talking about where it's maybe jumping from one plate to the other before you can get that pool, you know, where the arc is then sort of concentrating. So that start, I think, gets a lot of people, you know, so once you can get your speed, you're doing good, but sometimes the start can be a pain in the ass because you start to melt and then one side tends to melt, you know, away and form a big, you know, bead on one side. Now you have a gap between the two. So that's a little bit tricky. And then, like you said, Bob, you're kind of angling and pointing your tungsten the way you want to go. But if you angle too much and you try to get your filler rod, sometimes you're exposing the filler and it drops off before you can get it in the pool. So there's a little trickery going on in there for a lot of people too.
Yeah,
and it's exactly right.
It's like a Johnny Cash, man, get a rhythm to it, you know?
Yeah, you got to get a rhythm. But you got to know where to place the filler rod. And if you're trying to go straight in front of the tungsten, well, you're going to suffer the brunt of the heat. So you kind of go to the edge of the weld pool with it. And since I'm a right-handed guy, my left hand's coming in. I'm coming in a little bit on the back side, but not directly in front of that hot tungsten because it's going to melt. You minimize that again by what you said. You tip the torch up more perpendicular instead of being more parallel to the plate. So there are tricks to it.
Yeah, man.
Yeah, you're using that cup to kind of shield the heat to the filler rod. Right, and until you can get down in there, and like you said, just touch the outside of that pool, and it'll suck it right into the pool where your tungsten is kind of aiming and pulling, you know?
Sucks it right in, yep.
Yeah.
If you're using the right diameter filler rod.
And it's so weird, you know, in short, because we've got to wrap things up, I'll tell you, what's really cool is once you get in this groove, right, and once you feel it working, there is a very... just a rhythm about it, and things start to pile in and move and look the way you expect them to. But it really is muscle memory and just redundancy doing it over and over and over. But when you're doing it right, you definitely feel it. And when you're doing it wrong, consequently, you definitely
he'll
feel
tell
it.
You.
All right, Bob, where do people find more? Where do you, where would, you know, if somebody wanted to ask you some questions or, you know, find more about welding, where would somebody like yourself send them to?
I'd go up to the web. And again, make sure that you go to credible sources, major manufacturers of welding equipment, you know, Aesop, Miller, Lincoln, Everlast. I don't care your brand. They publish all good stuff. I stay away from some of the Yahoos on YouTube because they crack me up because that's more of a show. They're doing these things to kind of make a dynamic show of it, you know, to get users watching them. Go to the guys that invented the stuff. They know. And there's tons of stuff out there.
The Mr. Yahoos. Not the Yahoos. Hey, don't forget about going to our show, airing weekends on the Motor Trend Network. Check your local listings. It's also available on Motor Trend Plus, which is our streaming service and a great way to find us. A lot of episodes up there as well. Thanks to our guest, our buddy Bob. We call him Bob. Bob Blitzky from ESOB was how we first met the guy, but he's been a wealth of knowledge of all things to do with metals, metallurgy, and welding. So we appreciate his time. My man Kevin Bird, I am Willie B., a producer, Scoop, and executive producer, Bob Ecker.
Yeah, don't forget to check out our website, twoguidesgarage.com. Lots of great info on there. All about our shows, the things we use, and share your thoughts with us on Facebook, Instagram, and Twitter at Two Guys Garage. Now, this Two Guys Garage podcast, it's copyright 2023, Brenton Productions Incorporated, all rights reserved. You know, I don't know why, but somehow I got really comfortable with aluminum, and I really like it. I like the way the puddle moves. It's got some stability. You can make it look pretty. I think once you can kind of get past the cleanliness and going fast and the heat where maybe you're dropping your puddle off the filler a little bit too early. But the thing I still want to, you know, get that perfect dance with is stainless steel.
That's like having a love for redheads who like cats. I'm not there yet, man. I'm not there yet. I'll stick with steel and TIG. I love TIG welding steel, but aluminum, I haven't mastered it, but I haven't practiced with it, and therein lies the problem. So more
I take
practice.
Aluminum any day of the week.
I love it. I don't know why.
Any day of the week, I'm running a big aluminum job right now for South Carolina Department of Natural Resources. My son-in-law works for the Waddell Mariculture Center. He's a marine biologist. They raise fish, so we're making these aluminum cradles for egg catchers, which is hilarious. But anyway,
spoken like true engineers, I'll take the aluminum.
I'm in my zone. It's flowing. The aluminum just wets. It's pretty. You can look good. Like I can make 2 inches look great.
Yeah, I'm with you on that. If it's thicker than a beer can in aluminum, I'm happy. But like I said, we're gonna get you back soon, Bob. We'll dive into stainless. I got all the cleanliness and the lenses, but you know, it's more runny. And to try to, and I'm talking about making it look pretty, you know, but if you're running a header tube or something like that, you know, just getting those little stack of dimes to not be kind of left and right, you know, because it's sort of splashy. So,
yeah.
This is on the steels?
Stainless.
You said you're asking?
Yeah, stainless, yep.
On stainless, you got to keep a short arc length. I mean, short short.
Yeah. Well, you got to join us on another podcast because we got to go.
That's right.
Y'all take
Save it for the next one. Hope you guys learned something today. We'll have Bob back on again. See you on the next Two Guys Garage podcast.
Two Guys Garage podcast is a production of Brenton Productions. For more episodes, visit iHeartRadio, Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, Stitcher, Spotify, or wherever you listen to your favorite shows.